And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman here with Joseph Cooper. Chip Kidd is a rock star in the world of book jacket design. Prominent authors pressure their publishers to hire him. Some of his work has become iconic, such as the T-Rex silhouette for Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park. But Kidd also has the dubious distinction of owning one of the largest private collections of Batman memorabilia. In his graphic novel, he brings together his two passions, art and superheroes. Batman, Death by Design, follows the Dark Knight as he investigates a mystery involving an architectural landmark in Gotham City. Literary contributor Ariel Gonzalez spoke with Kidd. He began by asking him why a psychotic who dresses like a flying rat has had such a lasting hold on American culture.
I would define it less that way than... Why is reinventing yourself after a terrible tragedy taking such a hold on American culture? Because that is American culture. America, and, you know, I don't want to get too highfalutin here, but or pretentious. But, you know, America sort of came about by redefining itself. It wasn't the annex of Britain anymore. It was its own identity. And I think on a metaphorical level, that's part of why Batman is so enduring in his popularity. It's about somebody who had something horrible happen to them at a very young age, and instead of giving in to despair and sort of curling up in a ball and rocking back and forth in the corner, they decided to take charge of their lives and reinvent themselves as this completely different thing. So I think that aspect of the Batman story is tremendously appealing to people, and it's escapist fantasy. He's, you know, his greatest superpower, frankly, is money, and everybody loves that, and that grants him tremendous freedom to do this. And so, it's really less about, you know, psychotic flying rat than it is about reinventing yourself.
Well, Bruce Wayne seems fairly normal in your book.
Yes.
Sure, he's still avenging his parents' murder, but he's not the crazed brute.
Correct.
That was popularized by Frank Miller.
That is very correct.
In The Dark Knight Returns. Were you trying to make The Dark Knight a little less dark?
Well, I think, you know, I loved what Frank Miller did. Huge fan, obviously. I worked with him when he wanted me to redesign it and all of that, and that was great. For my book, I wanted to go back to aspects of Batman when I was a kid that I really liked, which it's great to be, like, you know, fearsome and not campy or silly, but at the same time, I'm not interested in a Batman or a Bruce Wayne that are constantly questioning themselves and questioning what they're doing. That's not interesting to me. This is the way it is, and it's important that he can be Bruce Wayne when he needs to be Bruce Wayne and get things done in that sector and that sphere. And then when that's not working anymore, then he becomes Batman and does what he can do as that character. And that works really well for me. And it's a very much a yin and a yang that's in balance. And, you know, it's just more fun for me as a kid when he's functioning this way. It's not dysfunctioning.
We're speaking with Chip Kidd about his graphic novel, Batman, Death by Design. Batman made his first appearance in 1939. Your book is drawn in black and white. Is this a homage to Batman's Depression-era beginnings?
Very much so. Absolutely. And it's also a kind of wish-fulfillment fantasy of, I wish, you know, they would have made a really great Batman movie in the 30s with high production values. And, you know, I looked at it as what if Fritz Lang would have taken this on and made Metropolis into Gotham. And the artist, Dave Taylor, really, really came through. And he's the one that had to make this all happen on the page. And I think he did a great, great job.
You drew this book, but you didn't write it?
I wrote it, what I would call art directed it. Uh-huh. But no, he drew it.
He drew it.
I laid out the panels. In other words, I broke down on a page the grid of the panels and what was happening in them. There's many different ways that you could write a comic book script. Most comic book writers do it almost as if it's like a screenplay where they're not necessarily breaking it down for the artist. They're just saying, all right, this is what has to happen on this page, that this character is going to say this, this character is going to say this, and by the time we get to the end of the page, this is where we are, next page. I went a little farther than that, and just because I didn't really know how else to do it. I knew visually how I wanted the panels to break down on any given spread, and the artist actually really liked that because it gave him more structure.
Well, tell us something about the plot. What mystery does Batman have to solve in your book?
Well, I started thinking about, well, what story could I tell that, every Batman story has been told. And I started thinking about the fact that I live and work in New York City, and I have for 26 years and counting, and I love it. But what sort of kind of urban injustice do I encounter, I'd say, on a at least weekly basis all the time? And that, to me, was having to go in and out of Penn Station, train station in New York City all the time. I'm traveling up and down the East Coast all the time for business and travel and what have you. And so I'd much rather take Amtrak than fly. And I love Amtrak when it works. But if you're going to take Amtrak in New York, you have to use Penn Station. You also have to use it for a lot of other reasons, too. But when you see the glory that was the original Pennsylvania Station building, McKim, Mead & White, that was designed, I believe, in like some 1905 or something, and then it was demolished in 1963 and basically replaced with Madison Square Garden, and then Penn Station was relegated to basically be the basement underneath Madison Square Garden, and, you know, with airless and low ceilings and fluorescent lighting, and that's a true crime. A true crime that they allowed that to happen. And so that's one aspect of the story, is that you have Wayne Central Station, which is this sort of grand, old, wonderful building, but it's crumbling and falling into disrepair, and it's been marked for demolition as the story opens. And in real life, after the only good thing to come out of the demolition of the Pennsylvania Station was that a bunch of people in New York woke up and said, okay, we need a landmarks commission so that this doesn't happen again. And another building that was marked to be torn down in the 70s then was the Grand Central Station. And one of the chief people who rose up against this was none other than Jackie Onassis. She was a real pioneer in saving that building. So I created this character named Cindy Asil, who's named after my aunt, who plays that role. She's trying to save the Wayne Central Station. And Bruce Wayne actually is in favor of demolishing it. And part of that, the reason for that, which he cannot articulate, is that he wants to build a covert travel hub underneath that site so that the Batmobile can get anywhere in Gotham it needs to underground, and then build a new station on top of that. And of course he can't say that. So in Cindy's eyes, he's sort of callously, flicking away the memory of his father, who built this amazing building.
Well, accidents take place, lives are placed in jeopardy. But what comment, if any, were you making about modern architecture? Because there's an architect in the novel that is very creative, but he seems to be the butt of a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
Were you doing your own version of From Bauhaus to Our House there?
I'd say I probably was. The architect in the book is called Kem Roomhaus, and I think if you know anything about contemporary architecture, you know who I'm talking about there. And I think the new train station that he designs and presents to Bruce Wayne, which again, Dave Taylor had to actually design it, is beautiful. I mean, it's really kind of great. I think I'm mocking just pretension there in general, the way he describes his work and a way a lot of architects describe their work. To me, has nothing to do with the actual work. Even if the buildings are great, all that architecture speak. Or art speak, to me, can be really rather silly. I'd say, though, what I'm sort of critiquing here more than the architectural process is the building trade. in New York. And so once I established kind of what the story was going to be about, the other main factor in this story that was taken from real life were these massive construction crane collapses in Midtown Manhattan in spring of 2008, which were truly astonishing. I mean, those were literally, you know, disasters in broad daylight in which, you know, 8 and 9 people died, and it happened again, and it happened again after that. And it's really all about graft. It's about paying off the inspector to look the other way, and to about mounting your crane on the side of the building as opposed to anchoring it to the ground like legally you're supposed to, so the thing ends up toppling over. And
well, that's what happened at the storm lately.
Yes, and that was 2 blocks from my office. And so they cordoned off our building for 2 days. We couldn't go in, not because the loss of power at all, but because, we're worried that this great bloody crane's going to fall on you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that again, and that's very shady, too.
Okay. Well, we need to take a break. When we return, we'll continue speaking with Chip Kidd. I'm Ariel Gonzalez, and you're seeing Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN. Welcome back. I'm Ariel Gonzalez, and this is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN. Our guest today is author and illustrator Chip Kidd. In his latest graphic novel, Batman Death by Design, The Dark Knight tries to solve a mystery involving an architectural landmark in Gotham City. Chip, Batman is not the only superhero here. There's a masked vigilante named Exacto.
Yes.
Exacto shares similarities with Batman. They're both geniuses suffering from childhood traumas.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come up with this character?
Well, again, you know, DC Comics really gave me extraordinary freedom to create characters if I wanted to, which was tremendously exciting. And so I created the Gotham Gazette newsroom, and there's a reporter, and there's his boss, and all of that, and then the heroine Cindy Asil. But I wanted to create this new sort of anti-hero or villain or whatever you want to call him, Exacto. And of course that's a takeoff on the name of an Exacto knife. But although his character has nothing to do with knives, I just think the name Exacto sounds really cool and nobody ever took it. But he's sort of what I call Batman villain as architectural critic. And so you are correct. He is, you know, when you finally get to his backstory, you sort of understand who he is and where he's coming from. But as he makes his first appearance, he basically sort of magically appears at the openings of these new structures and basically says, this is not built correctly and it's about to crumble. And so then it does. And so you're led to question, well, did he make it do that, or did it just do that because he's right? And then I guess I don't think I'm giving anything away by the fact that he sort of appears and disappears mysteriously, and you finally start to understand that he's a hologram and that he's projecting himself from another place. And I love that idea that there's the story is sort of divided in two, and there's a cliffhanger sort of in the middle where everybody is kind of trapped at the top of this construction crane that is about to go over, basically, because it's been timed to do so, and everybody's trapped on it. And, Batman says to Exacto, well, aren't you forgetting something? And Exacto says, I better not be. And he said, well, you're going to die here with the rest of us. And he says, well, no, because I'm not actually here. And then he literally turns himself off and disappears. And that's, you know, that's sort of the magic of comics in this particular genre of comics.
I won't give away Exacto's secret identity.
Right.
But his face looks awfully familiar. It's quite memorable. I don't even have to close my eyes. It's as if I'm staring at it right now. Why did you use your own image for Exacto? Were you fulfilling a childhood fantasy?
I would say I was. Absolutely. I mean, not that I dreamt of being a Batman villain as a kid, but, I started thinking about, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to do this again or get this opportunity, and it was only about a third of the way into the process that I said to the illustrator Dave Taylor, I said, oh my god, Exacto should be me. That character, his secret identity, should basically be me at around age 25, 26. And so I sent him a bunch of photo reference, and he very kindly obliged. That was, I sort of like, I couldn't resist doing that.
We're speaking with Chip Kidd about his graphic novel, Batman Death by Design. Batman and Xacto both have to battle the Joker.
Yes.
Thanks to Jack Nicholson and Heath Ledger, the Joker is almost as famous as Batman.
Right.
How did you envision him?
I envisioned him as a version of his original inspiration in the comics, which was a silent movie actor named Conrad Veidt, V-I-D-T, in a movie called The Man Who Laughs. And this is, of course, like everything else, all over YouTube if you want to see it. And it really is kind of wonderful and uncanny. It's like seeing the Joker in a great German expressionist, a silent film from the late 20s. And he really looks like the embodiment of what of the way he was originally drawn in Batman number one, which is to say, you know, he's a clown, but he's very frightening. Especially like with the bags under the eyes and very sort of, you know, a grin, but a horrible grin. And so my instructions to Dave Taylor was to draw him that way. But Dave did a wonderful job with his wardrobe. He's really sort of, he's very dandy and dressed up to the nines. I think, not that I really have a problem with the Heath Ledger Joker at all. I think it's a wonderful take on the character, obviously. But to me, the Joker was always very put together. From the makeup or whatever it is to what he's wearing, he's not a bum, and he's not careless about his appearance that way, and again, that's just sort of like a great affectation of that character from that time.
Well, the interesting thing about Batman's villains is that they're all emotionally or psychologically damaged. Two-Face is schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. Catwoman's a kleptomaniac. the Joker is a psychopath, clearly.
Yeah.
Can you name another superhero with so many twisted villains?
Oh, golly. Well,
because in a sense, they're projections of Batman, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I think, if anything, a lot of the criticism of certain Batman films or Batman projects is that, you know, the danger of making this stuff is that the villains can take over literally and become more interesting than the hero. Mm-hmm. And I do think that is something to be wary of, because Batman is very interesting to me. So he shouldn't play second fiddle to. But of course, there's more of them than there are of him. Which is part of why Robin and then all the Batgirl and all the quote Batman family grew, because I think they needed to counterweight all of these wonderful villains. Most of the well conceived and well drawn superhero characters have wonderful villain casts. Certainly Superman does, certainly Spider-Man does. The X-Men do, although it starts to get more complicated with that particular mythology. And, you know, as we will see, you know, the Avengers, there's all sorts of stuff to, you know, all sorts of wonderful villains.
Well, you mentioned Robin. Robin, Batgirl, Commissioner Gordon, none of them appear in your book. Why
Correct.
Did you leave them out?
I left them out because I only had so many pages to work with, and you know, and I introduced these new characters, and you know, I just sort of had to draw the line. I mean, I love Commissioner Gordon, but there was no effective way to bring him into this. He's mentioned at one point. Harvey Dent is mentioned at one point, just to acknowledge that they're there. But no, and like, you know, like you said, this is very much an homage to Batman's original appearance, and Robin didn't show up for about a year and a half. So I will say, I'm probably not supposed to talk about it, but I don't care, and it's not that big a deal. But I've written a new 8-page Batman and Robin story for DC Comics for a backup feature for one of their upcoming titles, and that was a real kick. I mean, and that's it's so different than Death by Design. It's a really classic Batman, and Robin is 10 years old, and it's about when Robin meets Superman for the first time.
Well, that relationship between Batman and Superman is interesting. Didn't you write a Superman-Batman story?
For Alex Ross, yeah.
For the great, you know, comic book illustrator.
Yes, for a book called Mythology.
And for a long time, I think since Frank Miller, there's been very great antagonism between these characters.
I've never understood that.
But you don't, you disagree. You don't
totally disagree.
Yeah.
It's like saying that George Washington and Thomas Jefferson are at each other's throats. You know, I don't get that either. It's Pollyanna, but I grew up with when these characters, quote, were friends. And that just makes so much more sense to me. You know, you could go into all sorts of geek theories about, you know, it doesn't really make sense for Batman to be pissing off Superman because he'll crush him like a bug. But that's a whole other issue. That's a logistical issue. I just think it's far more interesting for them to be compatriots. Although, you know, the Alex Ross story, which was a joy to do and watch him paint, he's a genius, was about the idea, okay, what happens when Superman is suddenly inexplicably out of control and Batman has to stop him? You know, how does he do that? And you know, there is a way, but he's doing it not to destroy him. He's doing it just to stop him and help him and fix him. And that just makes so much more sense to me.
Well, Batman's costume has undergone many changes over the last 70 years. Mm-hmm. How did you see his costume? How did you draw?
I really wanted to keep to just the basic classic costume to the extent that the bat symbol on his chest, we went back to just a stylized pair of bat wings, which speaks to the symbol that was on his chest in the very first story, The Case of the Chemical Syndicate in Detective Comics number 27. And that lasted all of one issue. The next issue, 28, there was a little head attached to the bat symbol. But other than that, I wanted to keep it really old school classic costume.
And no nipples.
No nipples. I have to say, even though as much as I love Christian Bale and Christopher Nolan, the Batman as commando suit just doesn't work for me.
Thank you for coming in. We've been speaking with Chip Kidd.